The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And this is live one-on-one with Christoph Leitz, the sommelier at Quatrefoil, this gorgeous restaurant here in Dundas. And if you don't know where Dundas is, it's basically next door to Hamilton. If you're at McMaster, it's about a five-minute drive away. And by the way, in my exchange with Christoph, if it all seems weird, it's because I'm still dealing with my technical issues, so I can only work with one microphone. So I just say, bear with me. Most normal people would have had this problem solved, but I'm an idiot when it comes to technology. Quite frankly, it's amazing. I've been able to do a podcast for nearly 6 years and getting it out on a regular basis. But enough about me. Christoph, thanks so much for being a part of this.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Let's just start here, and we'll get into actually tell people what was the wine competition you just won.
Yeah, so CAPS, which is the Canadian Association of Professional Sommeliers. So there's a chapter in Ontario, in Quebec, and also in British Columbia. So we just got a nice competition. It was a tasting competition. It was called the CAPS Cup. It's always nice to have something coming to get us all together. I know most of people who were there and get all together, compete against each other. So the CAPS Cup was tasting. So six wines we had, three whites, two reds, and a sweet wine. And we had to answer questions about it.
So we'll get to it in a second, because I want to talk about wine competitions and how you train for it. Also, your best and worst ever calls. And it doesn't just have to be the most recent one. One where you're like, I can't believe I nailed that Northeastern Italian Pinot Gris versus, did I call Sangiovese Bordeaux? What the hell happened to me? Let's start here. How did you first get into food and wine?
My parents always cook really good food. Always have some wine on the table. That was a big part. Really, to start in the industry, I traveled to Australia. I think I was 21 years old. And when I came back from Australia, I traveled to Australia for a year working on a fishing boat, actually. Went to Asia. And when I came back, I had just finished college. And what do I do now? I'm 21 and I just had a very good trip for a year. And my stepdad, who runs a culinary school in Quebec City, that's where I'm from, he just was telling me about that course, because it's a culinary school, but they have of course culinary, but butchery, bakery, and they had a hospitality service, so they train you to become a server. So I'll do that that course, which was a year. I started doing that, and during those classes, so we learn how to become a server, but also have a lot of theory about like fish and sauce and like butchery. And we had a bar in the school, so we were trained to make cocktails. And there was also once a week a wine class, and that's what I really enjoying doing. After a few months, I got my first job in a restaurant as a food runner, because I was trained a little bit. So in a great restaurant in Quebec City, I was just running food, and I made a good friend who was a server. He was my age, my friend Justin. I went to his apartment. And he already did the sommelier course in Quebec, which is the equivalent of the CAPS. And he had a bunch of wine book, and I was very interested about that. So I asked him, can I borrow a book, a wine book? And I start reading it, and I just really loved it. At the school, there was a competition in Quebec for best like young new sommelier. I was not in a sommelier program. I was in the hospitality, but I still signed up, and I start getting books and read everything, and I end up winning the competition.
Really? How old were you for this?
21.
So 22. So a very, very young age when you got into this. And that's interesting. So part of it influenced by your family, because good food and good wine was something you just got used to. And your stepdad pushing you in on the culinary side. Also, how much of an influence was just the geography? Because, you know, Quebec has such a rich tradition when it comes to food and wine.
Yeah, for geography. Actually, my mom, she was also a principal in school, but before that, she was a geograph. And so I've always liked to look at maps. I think it's the when you start studying wine, maps are very, very important to look to know where things are. Like, okay, where is Slovakia versus Slovenia? If you look at Austria, just an example, because I was studying Austria this week. Yeah, geographic is important. I love to look at maps and see where things are. It helps you to understand.
That, by the way, that's so, you can see where this is coming from. Not only the food and the wine, but geography, because when you're studying to become a sommelier, when you're studying or getting ready for a wine competition, part of what you're doing is just looking at maps, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big part for sure. And when you want to do wine competition, there's so much to do and you don't know what they're going to ask you. And I think the theory is always the most important part, because everything that you're tasting comes with theory first. And yeah, I think just very good.
Is there a wine back then when you were in your early 20s that really, because obviously you got motivated at a young age, it's something that you loved. Was there a wine or was there a region that you fell in love with that particularly pushed you into the career you're in now?
That's a very hard question to answer. I don't think there's any specific wine. Some people, I've heard that many times by other sommelier that, okay, that wine, it life changed, yeah. Changed my life. That's what got me to wine. I don't have an answer for that. No, I don't have an answer for that. There's a lot of wine that I like, but I don't have an answer for which wine really got me in there.
It's fair. No, by the way, you're right. I've done so many of these interviews and some people will tell me it was this bottle at this dinner. And then others, it was just, I woke up one day and I needed to learn more about wine and why I loved it and where it came from. Okay. Let's go to the competition. You won it. Congratulations. Walk us through first. Did you do theory as well, or is it just blind taste?
For that competition, it was only blind tasting.
Okay, so it's only blind tasting. Take us through what you remember first with the whites.
Well, the thing is that for that competition, we kind of used to do verbal tasting because I passed my advanced sommelier in last October.
Congrats.
Thank you. And that's all verbal. So you have three whites and three reds. You have 25 minutes and you go through all the wines. And for that competition, so you have like papers and you have to answer a question. So the way I did it, I didn't look at the paper. I just blind taste all the wines, made my idea, like what I thought those wines were. And then after I read the questions, so not to be like influenced by, okay, oh yeah, maybe it could be that. So I just, okay, this is this for those six wine. And then I read the questions. That's the way I approach that one.
What do you remember about the three white wines? Like, and by the way, I'll start here. Did they reveal, because when you're doing the quartermaster somm or other things, you never find out what the wines were. Did they tell you what the wines were?
They did. Yeah, they did. And they posted a picture on social media. They did reveal the wines. Yeah.
How'd you do? Like, what were the wines? And I guess really the question is, if you could tell me, what were the wines and what do you remember from the aromatics and on the palate that led you to your conclusions?
Well, the first wine, I just smell and taste it. And before looking at the paper, and to me, it just smelled like Grüner Veltliner. That's what I call it. That's what the wine was. It just smelled like pepper and like those crunchy vegetable, like when you make a mirepoix and you put it in the fridge and just very like spicy and vegetables component. Yeah, I made my mind of all the wines and I forgot what the second white was. I know there was a Malbec, and the last one, I think that's the one that caused most people problem. It was a sherry, and I call it sherry. The choice were like vin jaune and another sweet wine from Italy that I forgot, but it was a sherry, Manzanilla sherry.
And what is your approach? Because I always tell people whenever I'm doing blind, I won't do them nearly as well as you, that it's all about deciding what it isn't before deciding what it is by going, okay, I smell this, so it can't be that. It looks like that, so it can't be that. The acid, the tannins, the alcohol. Like, for me, it's always about first figuring out what it isn't before deciding what it is. But what is your approach when you're doing a blind?
I think everybody have a different approach for blind tasting. I've always kept my approach the same. Some people will smell all the wines before. Some people will my very good friend, very good sommelier, will start with the reds because he find like the whites can be too cold sometimes. But for me, I've always done the same. I start with the first one and then I do it all. And then the second one to the sixth one. That's just the way I do it, one after one, without switching, because I don't want to be on my wine number two and think, oh, damn it, what is wine number five? It's a smell that I recognize, but like, what is it? So I don't want to think about all the wines while I'm tasting. So I just go one to number six and see what happens.
I often find the biggest trap is you smell it and you decide, you know what it is before you've gone through body, tannin, acid, things like that. Have you ever been caught in that where you've made up your mind before actually going through the whole process?
Yeah, it happened. It happened for sure. But sometimes if you just know what it is, like some grapes can be similar, like, for example, Cabernet Franc and Beaujolais can be comparable, but sometimes I just smell it and it's got to be Cabernet Franc. It's not Beaujolais, so I just go to it. But it can be.
What is the grape or the wine or the region that you find you're best at identifying? And is there a region wine grape that gives you the hardest time?
The best at identified, I would probably say Cabernet Franc. From Chinon, for example. Mm-hmm. And there's few. New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc can be very easy to identify, but you have to be careful because it could be also something else. There's other place with that kind of style. But I would say, yeah, Cabernet Franc probably. And the hardest will be probably something like Merlot from Washington, mm-hmm. something like that. Because you kind of tend to go to California, but oh no, okay, it's Washington Merlot, and they can be similar.
That's, by the way, that's mean when they throw in the Washington Merlot. That I think of that's a little bit mean. Also, like when they put two very medium to low aromatic whites next to each other, I find all like, what is there any tricks where you're like, okay, I see what you're doing. You're just trying to make life difficult for us.
Yeah, of course, those non-aromatic grape, but they. Yeah, Albarino can be very hard to. Albarino and Pinot Grigio can be similar. And also, there's a Sancerre, which is 100% Sauvignon Blanc. It used to be quite, I wouldn't say easy, because nothing is easy to blind taste, but it used to be easier than now with the climate changing. And I have a great tasting group called Team Niagara. And I remember a few months ago, we all blind taste and nobody called it Sancerre, and it was Sancerre. And Sancerre can be anything right now, except in different vintage. For example, 2021, it's a very bad year in Sancerre. But for me, it's a very good year because it smells and tastes like Sancerre.
Yeah.
If you have 2020 or 2019, it could be anything because it doesn't. You don't have that like herbaceousness, the classic Sancerre smell and taste. So for me, 2021 Sancerre is amazing because it's still Sancerre.
Yeah. Then it's tough. Then you're like, is this Chablis? They're going to a couple different areas. When you watch like a Rocky movie, there's always the montage of Rocky getting ready to a fight, you know, whether he's in Russia for part four, whatever. And I'm wondering, what does the montage look like for Christoph when you are getting ready for one of these wine competitions?
Try to relax as you mean, like just before.
Yeah. You know what? Let's two parts. 2 weeks leading up to it, and the night before.
2 weeks before, I would say just going through my notes to my atlas that I've always write notes in there to remember where things are. Looking at maps, obviously. Always do a service practice before. We have a good group. We always help each other when somebody's going to a competition or a test, because competition and tests are very different, a very, very different thing. So, but we always have a good group that will make a mock practice for sure and a blind tasting. So I will blind taste for sure. And Terry is always, as I said, the most important, I would say.
And then the night before.
The night before, try to relax, have a good dinner at a restaurant.
The biggest difference between a test and a competition is what?
A test, for example, when you go for the certified or the advanced or the master, you kind of have an idea what it's going to be. You know you're going to have a service. You know you're going to have a service practice with a decanting table and a sparkling table. And you know what they're going to you don't know what they're going to ask you, but you know the format, and then you will have a tasting, and it's for sure three whites and three reds. You have 25 minutes, so which is 4 minutes and 10 seconds per wine you have to describe. It's always the same. Like, we have a grid, so you start visual, smell, taste, conclusion, possible conclusion. But a competition, it can be anything. Like, they can, you go on the stage and they can ask you to, I remember a couple of years ago, a competition, it was just, they give you three Pinot Noir. So you have to blind taste that. But it won't happen in a test. Not one is easier than the other, but you have a test, you're against yourself, and a competition, well, you have to beat people. Right. So at a test for the advanced or the master, you pass or you don't pass. It's not like, oh, you beat that person.
You mentioned earlier a tasting group and your Niagara tasting group. How important is for anyone getting into wine? How important is a good tasting group, whether it's passing tests or doing well in competitions?
I think it's very important. That's how we started. We took a break recently. We're not tasting at the moment, but for years we were tasting every Monday morning at 10:30. It was religious. It was my favorite day of the week with my friends, and we would always bring a bottle of white and a bottle of red, and we'll taste all day pretty much. And it's very important. And so that tasting group was called Team Niagara. And what I like the most about that is, because it can be intimidating sometimes to blind taste in front of people, but that group, there was no judgment at all. We would taste, and if you call something completely wrong, nobody's going to laugh at you. And because we all make mistakes and we all are wrong most of the time. So that's what I really like about that group. There's no judgment. We taste wine and we're having fun and we're all helping each other and having a great time.
What, and this might be a hard one, you might not remember, in any of these tastings or even really any of the competitions, is there a moment, do you have like a really a moment where you're like, wow, I nailed that. I can't believe I got that Albarino right. And you have another moment when you're thinking, Christoph, what are you doing? You call that Oregon Pinot, you know, that was clearly Beaujolais.
I will start with the worst one to start. I remember when I started here at Quarterfall. I've been here for over 7 years now. Jose, the sommelier here, the head sommelier at the time.
Jose
Luis Fernandez.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, very good friend of mine. He's been my mentor. I don't think I would be in Ontario if I don't think I would be here if I never met him. A very good friend, good mentor. So we used to have a stagiaire before COVID. So people come for like student, like cap student for to do stage. And so that was like the first day of the person. And so Jose introduced me to that person. And at the end of the night, so it's like I was a sommelier already. And at the end of the night, Jose gave me a glass of wine. And it's like, oh, what is that? And I didn't have to go to the grid and like blind taste the whole thing. It's like, okay, cowboy that. So that's an expression we used to, okay, what is it? So I took like 10 seconds, smelled, try the wine, and I called it a Pinot Grigio. And it was like the most oaky, Chardonnay, buttery taste.
Ah!
And I felt so bad after. It was like, I didn't sleep well that night. And the next day I was like, oh, what happened? And I was so mad because I'm very competitive. And it's like, oh no. But it's a thing, as I said, with our tasting group, when that thing happened, nobody laughed at you. It's all good.
It's important, by the way, having it in a judgment-free zone. I remember even when I was doing the diploma level for WSET, people would, like when you're in a class and you're doing tastings, people would still get sheepish. And these are people that have worked in the industry, you know, for years and years and years and were very good at it. There's something that can be very intimidating. And it's also a reminder that when you're learning about wine, damn, is it humiliating. Or not humiliating, excuse me. It's very humbling.
Yeah, that's true. And like you might get a wine totally right, but the next one you might be totally wrong. So I don't like the big celebration when people like blind taste a wine and got it right and like just jump around, like keep it down.
What are some of the misconceptions people have about the life and the job of a sommelier?
I would say definitely people assume it's just like drinking wine and that's all. My time involved with wine is at least 95% theory. So that's, as I said, theory is the first thing. You can't be a good sommelier if you, well, maybe you can, but you have to know the theory. That's, yeah. So I would say the most misconception is people just, oh, you just like try wines and blah, blah, blah. But it's a lot of study, maps, theory, like remembering thing and service.
Yeah, it's a lot of memorizing of mountains, rivers, winds, and producers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What do you enjoy now? You know, what, because I know it can change by season and things like that. And also you just discover a new producer and then you start drilling down on maybe a very specific appellation. For you, Christoph, is there anything that you're really enjoying right now?
I drink a lot of different things. For example, yesterday we drank for dinner a bottle of Riesling from Ripon, the producer in central Otago.
Yes.
Dry Riesling from South Island of New Zealand. It was delicious. But other than that, we kind of like go all over the place. Yeah.
By the way, let's see. We are about 23 minutes into this interview and the first reference to Riesling. Eventually it was going to happen because it's a rule. Every sommelier at some point has to mention Riesling. Let's talk a little bit about this restaurant. Again, how many years have you been here and how would you would define Quatrefoil?
I've been here for 7 years now. Quatrefoil has been open for 12 years at the moment. Family-owned restaurant, Chef Fraser McFarlane and Georgina Mitropoulos are the owners. Very great place to work. I've been here for 7 years, so that's that tells a lot about how great that place is. Treat us very well. We used to do tasting menu every Friday, 5 courses. We don't anymore since COVID, but on request we always do that. So that's always fun to play with wine pairing. It's a small restaurant. The wine list is not massive, but we have some great wines from all over the world, pretty much.
What were the toughest parts for you and for this restaurant during COVID?
My toughest part during COVID is it was when we were open and allowed to have only 10 people in the restaurant, and everybody. So we tried to only allowed to have 10 people at the same time. No alcohol service after 9, and everybody gone by 10 o'clock. So that was very challenging because they were excited to come, and you just have to tell them, well, you gotta go because we have another sitting, because like people have to be gone by 10 and no alcohol service at 9. To like even like you have to refuse coffee from people because it's you gotta go. That was the hardest part for me. Can't take care of the guests properly, that you do your normal service and just be on the rush, like, okay, that person is 10 minutes late while they have only an hour and 40 minutes.
That must be tough because you've studied, you know, you said you passed your advanced. So much of it is about service. And part of being a sommelier, your job is to make the night pleasurable for all the customers. And now these rules were put in that kind of went against all the entire philosophy of what it means to be a sommelier.
Yeah, exactly. People will sit at the table and they will look at the wine list and think about a wine, and then they want to have a cocktail first. And in my head, like normally I'd be okay, great, let's have a cocktail first. But in my head, it's like, oh no, you only have like an hour and a half left. And you have 4 cocktails and a bottle of wine. Like, are you gonna? What about the, like you gotta speed up? So that was very, very hard.
Yeah, that would be. You're treating it like it's Mission Impossible, where you got 10 seconds before the bomb explodes and you got to cut the right wire. Looking on the website, you guys a little while ago had a Leaning Post wine dinner. And I'm curious, you know, your view on the Niagara wine region and where it is now versus, say, you know, a decade or so ago. Like, just how do you view the wines that are coming from not that far from here?
Well, we had a Leaning Post wine dinner actually last Thursday, not even a week ago. It was fantastic. Ilya and Nadia, they're great, very Leaning Post. I love their wine. I think Niagara has phenomenal wines, very talented winemakers. There's so many grapes we can use to make good wines. Great teacher. I remember going to Niagara College when I first moved here. Very great teacher. Winemaking teacher. His name was Gavin. Great, very knowledgeable people from all over the place. Niagara is very promising.
Is there a producer you would recommend to the person that loves wine but is skeptical of Ontario? that says, oh, Ontario, they can't make a big red wine for me. I'm not talking like, you know, some bold on the level of, say, a Napa Cabernet, but, you know, the person who maybe is skeptical of Ontario red wine.
Well, for Ontario red wine, there's many different great red wines. I think we make awesome Pinot Noir. As I said, Leaning Post make fabulous Pinot Noir. There's many different places. I really like Cabernet Franc as well. But if you think about full body red wine, rich, elevated alcohol, Pareja Peruso, like Organized Crime in Beamsville, they make great wine. I had a tasting yesterday of some of their wines. There's one called the Download.
Yeah,
it's a blend of Cabernet Sauvignon, Malbec, and Petit Verdot, if I'm not mistaken. It's great wine. It's full body. It's rich. They do a little bit of a appassimento to bring a fuller body.
Yeah, they got the pipe down as well. Yeah, they really play well with the Bordeaux blends. I love. I've been going to Organized Crime for probably a decade. I'm a big fan of it. You sort of talked about it a little bit, but what is just, you know, it's not a giant list here, and it wouldn't make sense. You're a small restaurant in Dundas, but how would if you were going to talk about some of the highlights of the wine program here, if you were going to describe the wine program, what would you say about it?
What I like to do is change things a lot. I like to change probably at least one thing by the glass a week most of the time. I change a lot. Sometimes I will change four wines by the glass. I never keep the same by the glass list for more than a month, I would say.
I'm going to interrupt for a second. That is awesome. I hate, it's one of my pet peeves, I hate wine bars that say we're a wine bar, and it's three reds, three whites by the glass, and you go back 6 months later, and it's the exact same wine. I'm like, if you make money, great, you got rent, but you're not a real wine bar.
Yeah, and it's just more fun for me, and also for the guests, but also for the server and everybody who works there, because we have new things and new things to talk about, and it's also a learning for me to change, and not just for the tasting part, but for the theory part as well.
How difficult is it about between being a businessman and being an artist? I imagine there's some wines you love where you're like, oh my God, this should be on the list. This is a beautiful wine. But the problem is no one's going to buy it. They haven't heard of it. They don't understand it. And you know, if you have these wines, it's easier to sell. And let's face it, part of the importance of wine is it helps keeping restaurants open, keeping people paid. But can it be hard for you about you want to throw on, you know, you want to buy a six pack of some funky, you know, wine, but maybe no one knows much about it?
That's a great question. I love that. I bought a wine, I would say a month ago or something. And I'm the only person selling it because some wines are very hard to print. If you go to Greece, it's not the one I'm talking about, but we had a Greek dinner a couple months ago. And I mentioned when I was talking to the wines, about the wines to everybody, I would say, I said, like, we would sell way more Greek wine if they were not so hard to pronounce or something. It can be intimidating for people. When I'm on the floor and somebody asked me to go to a table for a recommendation, I can sell it easier. Look, people will never like pick that wine, but I can explain and like they don't have to pronounce it. So I will just take care of that. For example, as I said, I bought that wine from Pays Vasco, which is a Basque country in north of Spain. And it's the appellation is called Chacolina, and the grape is called Andarubi Zuri, and they are Andarubi Belza. So people like don't know that, but the wine is so good. And so when somebody asks me to recommend something and to go with that, I will just like point it and like, oh, that's an indigenous grape from that area. And I will just describe, not even have to mention the appellation, but I sell a lot of it.
It's so much about selling the story. It's why it's hard. Like, as you said, Zeno Mavra is a great red wine, but it can be hard to sell. We were talking before about your background in Austria. Austrian reds, I was there, they're incredible, and fell in love with Zweigelt, Blackflush, Saint Laurent. You have to really sell the story to a customer to get them to buy a bottle of that versus a bottle of Burgundy.
100%, yeah. Yeah, it's nice to discover new things, but I also agree with people want to get what they know as well. So that's the fun part of service, to sometimes make people discover new things. But there's also, I like my classic as well. I will never have only like things that people don't know. I always have Chablis sans serre, like yeah. I have Chablis by the glass all the time. That's the thing here. I get the classic wines from a little bit everywhere. I got mostly French and Italian, but I have wine from Croatia, from Austria, Chile, Argentina, a bit of everything. Of course, I have a Malbec. Like people want Malbec, yeah, absolutely.
How important is wine to the economic stability for restaurants? How important is wine just to help keep the lights on?
That's a great question. I would say it won't be an exact number, but if I think about like for example, like a service night, I would say maybe 80% of people will at least have a glass of wine at the table, if not a bottle. That's my estimation. So I think if 80% of people have a glass of wine or a bottle, I think it's great for the business.
And finally, again, congrats on winning the Caps Cup. What is next for you in terms of training, in terms of maybe getting a master's degree? Is there another wine competition you're eyeing right now? What is the next year looking like for Christoph?
Well, I'm gonna go for the master for sure. I'm not sure exactly when it will be. Probably in April or May. I'm going to New York to visit some winery. We're going to Finger Lakes and then to Long Island, that's in November. And I'm also going to Chicago for another tasting competition, which is next week.
Congratulations again on winning and appreciate the time. Before we go, promote the restaurant. Tell people where it is, websites, whatever. Because, I mean, I've heard of this place. It's cool to come here just to sit in. This is a really pretty restaurant. On the outside, it feels like you're just going into someone's really nice home. What do people need to know?
Well, it's a awesome restaurant. We have regulars been coming for over 12 years. We are friendly, small, it's casual. Very nice patio as well when you're in the summer. Delicious wine, delicious food. We can do a tasting menu for anyone at any time. And menu, also I said that I change the wine often, but the menu change also. There's always a new thing every week on the menu.
And is there a website? What's the address here?
The website will be quarterfallrestaurant.ca, I believe. And the address, so it's in Dundas, which is very close to Hamilton.
Yeah.
So the address is 16 Sydenham Street in Dundas, Ontario.
By the way, it's not like you need. It's funny. I should have just given the address. It's not like you need the address. You've been coming here for 8 years. Listen, Christoph, thank you so much for doing the podcast today.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And I hope to see you coming for dining at the restaurant. So
next time you see me, it's absolutely because I want to get nosy with the buy the glass, buy the bottle. And again, appreciate Christoph, you doing the pod. Thanks for everyone for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Apple, Spotify, Audio Boom. Remember to rate, review, tell your friends, tell your enemies. Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.